This week begins the selection that will determine everything.
So over the top and unnecessary.
I was going to start our podcast by doing like, this week, two men will discuss the most important games of the week in a podcast that will determine everything.
Do it.
I think I just did it.
All right, perfect.
All right, Dan, we're live.
All right.
Dan Partridge, live from Phoenix, Arizona on Skype. I'm Tom Zalesnok. This is week 10. Week 10, Dan.
Wow, can't believe it. The season's flying by.
Seems like only yesterday Boise State was getting exposed by Ole Miss.
Yeah, and they were almost not covering against UConn. Yet they scored 41 points in the first half this past weekend, but that's not here nor there.
Yes, my dramatic intro there was for all of you who have seen the college playoff selection show. We're taping this on Tuesday. It's 9:30. Just watched the show a couple hours ago. The top four teams, as you'll undoubtedly already know by the time you listen to this, Mississippi State 1, Florida State 2, Auburn 3, a little surprising, not to us, but to some people, I think.
Correct.
And Ole Miss 4. The reason I say a little surprising is because the last couple days before the playoff show, but after the Saturday games, almost every analyst had Bama and Oregon at 3 at 4. And it was the first week, actually, where most analysts agreed and had the same four teams. And of course, they turned out to be wrong.
No, they are still wrong. And we're right, because that's the exact correct order. There's nothing to talk about. Mississippi State's clearly one. Florida State, clearly two. And then you got to pick your two best one-loss teams. And the two best one-loss teams in this country are Ole Miss and Auburn, in either order. And it doesn't matter. It's really a shame they got to play each other this week. But Oregon has zero right to say anything. They lost at home to Arizona. I know they beat Michigan State, but they were losing going into the fourth quarter, I believe, if not late third. So they have nothing to talk about. Alabama, clearly, you know, they played a hard game at Ole Miss and lost. But I think Ole Miss's loss at LSU, because of the low-scoring game and how it went down, I think it's a little bit worse. But moral story is the committee got it absolutely right. Bravo. Well,
I totally agree. I thought, you know, the rankings don't matter at this point in the season, but what does matter a lot is how the committee came out and showed us their selection criteria. I personally think they nailed it.
It's great.
If you're an Alabama fan, or if you're a fan of any SEC team, say Georgia, you have nothing to worry about because all of these teams will play each other and you'll play your way in or out of it. Nothing to worry about. If you're a fan of, say, Oregon or TCU, or any of these other teams, you do have something to worry about, and that is not your position, but that is the fact that the committee doesn't give a fuck about your conference anymore. If the best four teams are from the SEC, they're going to take the best four teams all from the SEC. They've made that pretty clear, it seems. And so, since the SEC is a dominant conference, that's bad news for the other conferences.
Yeah, absolutely.
I do think that the SEC will probably only get two max just because of the way the schedules play out. But it's exciting. I really think they nailed it, and I think they did a good job of adding a human element to the statistics. For example, I saw that one-loss Ohio State was at 16, one-loss Notre Dame was at 10, and then one-loss TCU, I think, was at 7.
That's right.
Those teams all have one loss, but if you've watched them play, there's clearly a separation between the three of them, and that's represented. You know, TCU, I think, is playing a lot better than Notre Dame. And Notre Dame, I think, is playing a lot better than Ohio State. So the rankings all reflected that, and I don't know. I'm pleased.
TCU scored 82 points last week, just putting that out there. And they lost because they gave up 24 points in the last 5 minutes to the hardest offense in the country. TCU is unbelievably good. And it's nice to see that the committee, even though they're not in the SEC with one loss, they gave them a nice ranking. I think they're at 7.
Yeah, we're going to go conference by conference today, just like we did last week. What I learned this past weekend is that the Big 12 has two pretty good teams, and they're not the two teams that we expected at the beginning of the year.
I know.
Dan, would you like to recap Ole Miss losing to LSU?
Sure. Hardest place to play in the whole country. LSU, you know, was so fired up trying to save their season. Ole Miss has the murderer's row schedule of, you know, at LSU, home against Auburn. And as crazy as it sounds, that LSU game, although it is LSU's kind of a look-ahead game in a way because they already had two losses. But, you know, it's a weird game, low-scoring game. Their defense played great as normal. Bo Wallace had his worst game of the year, which is going to happen in that environment. He's never going to play in a harder environment than that the rest of the year. I'm upset that they lost because I was kind of hoping for them to be undefeated. And then I could root for Auburn this week, so they both have one loss. But Ole Miss is still an absolute powerhouse, and they're definitely a top five team in the country.
Yeah, I was at a wedding, my 58th wedding of the summer, so I did not see this.
I know. It's unbelievable. It has to stop.
Yeah, I have had so many weddings. I think I've only had one full day of college football this season.
Oh,
I've gotten in bits and pieces. I did not see any of this game. I did see portions of a couple other games that I'll talk about, but just from looking at the stat line and seeing the highlights, it appeared to me that this was sort of a classic LSU game, a big day running with Hilliard and Fournette, great defense, clearly by the score, and then some, you know, late game dramatics, Les Miles pulling it out of his, you know.
Ass, we're unedited, that's fine, let's do this.
Yeah, I don't know why I froze up. See, I was going to go edited, and then I thought I should go unedited, and by the time I thought that, I just totally froze up.
Yeah, but, you know, it happens in language.
I apologize. Pray for me during this difficult time. I read a quote by Les Miles, and I want to share it. He said, "Never in my mind have I ever been an underdog in my own stadium."
That's correct.
That pretty much sums it all up, right?
Yeah, well, first of all, he's been a favorite like 95% of the time, probably. So, like, the other, like, six games or whatever the hell it was, like, there's no way, like, LSU was like, oh, man, we're getting 17 at home. Like, it's not that crazy, but it's true, yeah.
LSU is now 6-2, I believe. They have two losses. One is to the number one team in the country, and the other is to the new number three team in the country. Two current playoff teams. I think we can no longer call this a bad LSU team, a rebuilding LSU team, a down LSU team. They may be slightly down compared to the rest of the SEC West, but this is a good LSU team that just happens to lack a quarterback.
They are a LSU team, period. They're not good or bad. They're just LSU. They have guys who are freak athletes all over the field who are going to the NFL. They got a great running game with a bunch of running backs and a questionable quarterback. So they're going to be up and down, but they're still a team that's somehow going to win 8, 9, 10, 11 games every year, maybe 12, you know. But LSU's just every year so good. And even though they started off slow, they're still great.
Any thoughts on the sort of tactical mistake Ole Miss made at the end? Do you think they should have tried to kick a long field goal at the end of the game? Does it matter?
No, because that field goal wasn't going in, like, at all. It's college special teams, and it's LSU, and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, like, no. I think I'd probably throw a Hail Mary there, actually, to be honest with you.
Fair enough. I have nothing to add. I have a lot of thoughts on Ohio State, Penn State, but I want to save that for the end of the recap. All right. So, as I said, I didn't see a lot. I'm just going to hand these off to you, Dan. There's Auburn, South Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi State, Kentucky. Any thoughts on any of those or any other big games?
Yeah, Auburn, that was as good as their offensive lines played all year, which is really important because they're not a team that will, you know, have a guy with 400 yards passing. Like, they're a run-first team, and their offensive line, honestly, has underperformed all year. So this was the first time I saw them really expose people off the ball, which is great. So that's a good, healthy sign going forward. Yeah, they gave up some points, but, you know, it's Spurrier at home. He was waiting for this one, you know, so I'm not really worried about that. Auburn's still really, really, really good.
Let me throw in a quote right there.
Yeah.
Gus Malzahn, after the game, talking about Spurrier in South Carolina, he said, they went for everything, and they got just about everything.
He's right. You know, I mean, and we were talking about this on the podcast in maybe August or September earlier in the year about how be careful laying points with a big-time, highly ranked team on the road if the home game for the other team is the most important game of the whole year. And that Auburn game is the most important game of the year probably for South Carolina. You know what I mean? They had a rough start. They can say, oh, don't worry about the early season. If we win this game, it's fantastic.
Right. I made a note after this game, or after seeing the highlights and the score. What I wrote down is that Auburn is the defending SEC champ. They played in the title game.
Yep.
They're going to get everybody's best game.
Correct.
So what you just said, I think, applies to most of the games they play, if not exactly all of them.
That's why they're so good, because every week everyone's trying as hard as they can to beat them, and they're like, well, we're on the road. I guess we'll do it. Like, there's so many NFL players on that South Carolina team, and a coach who's won, like, hundreds of games and national titles and Heisman Trophy winners, and it's really impressive. I mean, I know people are like, oh, I mean, Auburn was a 16-point favorite. It's like, really? You think they're going to cover every freaking time on the road? That's a lot of points, man. So Auburn and Ole Miss and TCU, just fantastic all week, I think.
Auburn, in case it was up for debate, clearly now has the hardest schedule in the country.
Like, they hardest
have
ever.
Five. Ever. It's one of the hardest I've ever seen. They have five of the 10 best teams in the country on the road.
Mm-hmm. That's insane. Think about that.
And that doesn't count LSU. Right.
Plus the SEC title game.
Yeah,
and
correct.
And the national title, hypothetically. I mean, those are all places away from their stadium. They could play five, six, seven games against top 10 teams away from their stadium. That's got to be the hardest schedule in the history of college football.
Them hosting LSU actually qualifies as one of their easier games this year.
It's unbelievable.
It really is crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, Alabama, I don't think we learned much from that game. Mississippi State, likewise. You know, they're not going to blow everybody out. They beat Kentucky by 14. Good enough.
Those two games were exactly the same. You know, teams that were supposed to win were like, ah, blah, blah, slop around win. On the road, too.
Yeah, respectable wins. They're not overly impressive, but they're good enough. And I don't think you can really take anything away from either team in both games.
Yeah, it's really hard to lay big points on the road in the SEC. I'm learning that this year.
Okay, it's time for Ohio State, Penn State.
Oh boy, go ahead, Z.
Did you happen to watch any of this?
Yeah, oh yes, I did.
Okay, I'll go first and then you can add. I have a lot of notes on this. I'll go in order. Very questionable refereeing, some of the worst I've ever seen.
Yes.
They gave them the ball when they shouldn't have had it, and then they gave them a field goal that they shouldn't have had. They basically spotted them a 10-point lead.
Right.
However, some of Penn State's biggest plays, including their touchdown pass, and there was a big pass at the end of the game, they were very lucky to complete those. They were kind of just up for grabs, and the receivers came down with them. So Penn State had some breaks as well. Not quite the same break as, you know, having a phantom interception, but Penn State was a little bit lucky as well. The game ended exactly as it should have ended, a microcosm of Penn State's season, which was that the offensive line and the running back protection did not hold up, and Joey Bosa basically threw Penn State's running back into Hackenberg and knocked him over. And when I saw that, you know, I did a rare thing, which is I actually watched the Sunday night replay of a college football game.
Oh, wow. That's hard.
Is hardcore. I always see those, you know, they replay Auburn, South Carolina on a Tuesday night. And I said, who the fuck watches this shit?
Yeah.
And then I go to a wedding all day Saturday, and now it's me.
Well, fair enough.
So here's a comment that I found online that I'm going to read. I did a lot of quoting today. But this one, I think, sums up exactly how I feel and exactly how most Penn State fans, at least the reasonable ones, should feel. It's from SBNation.com. It's from a user named Pass on First Down. And he left this on the October 26th, on Sunday. Happy Valley is still happy. Coming into this game, I was telling friends to take OSU and give the points. Penn State has two recruited scholarship offensive linemen, one of whom is a freshman. We thought we were going to get destroyed. Instead, what we saw was our team play with tremendous heart, with phenomenal fan support and almost beat you guys. Franklin is going to have the top recruiting classes in the Big Ten for years to come. We are very happy because we have been through a dark tunnel and now we see the light on the other side. I look forward to watching Penn State beat you guys, aka Ohio State, at the Shoe real soon.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd love to see Penn State beat Ohio State on the road once. That would be, I would be so happy.
I think everyone in America is on board with that.
I think I might actually have to root for Penn State for the first time in a long time if that actually, if things go as planned, but you never know. But I am pulling for them because it's been very, very rough for a once proud program.
Yeah, that Ohio State game, that's a tough way to lose, but given what we said on last week's podcast where we called Ohio State the lock of the week, I think Penn State did pretty well to even be in that game.
Yep.
Also, the coolest thing ever is the whiteout.
It is very.
I know that other teams try to copy it or do their own version of it, the red out or the camo out or whatever, but Penn State's is the original, and nobody does it better than them.
That's right.
It's one of the greatest things I see in college football, I think.
It's very good.
All right, Dan, I have nothing else for the recap. You ready to get into the lines?
Oh, of course I am. I'm always ready.
All right, we got a big, big Thursday night game.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the value that I was looking for in this line is not there. We've got Florida State at Louisville and only a 4-point spread. Started at 6. It's moved its way all the way down to 4.
Crazy. It's crazy to me. And this is a weird game. This is your classic Florida State road game, not on a normal weekend where they have trouble. This is where they lose to NC State multiple times, stuff like that. And that's what people are thinking. But Louisville, they do have a good defense because they still have, you know, all the leftovers from Chaz Strong, but they can't score a lot of points. And I think at this point where it's moved all the way to 4, you have to take Florida State. As crazy as it sounds, I mean, everything points to Louisville playing this game really close, but if I'm only laying 4 with Florida State, I'm going to lay 4 with them against probably every team in the country outside of like 4 or 5 teams. So lay it.
I think there is a chance they could lose the game. However, if you're betting smart, 4 points is not enough to take the points and hope for a cover. You have to basically think that Louisville's going to win this game if you take that spread.
Yeah, you're right.
And I believe the arrest of Carlos Williams, the way that Florida State had that the dramatics where they barely beat Notre Dame, they're going to be fired up. Whereas this would be normally a game where they got caught sleeping and would not cover and even lose. That's what I said. I thought going into the season, this game was going to have some value. I thought it's a potential sleeper upset. But what's happened over the last week, I don't know. I think Florida State's going to be mad. Jameis Winston, he's like the Hulk. You know, when he gets mad, he's stronger and better.
I think you're right. And look, like I said, lay the 4 until proven wrong. They've won like, what, 23 games in a row or something? I mean,
something crazy like that.
4 points. Come on, lay it.
All right, let's power through the ACC games. We're on to Saturday now. That's the only week game worth discussing. Boston College at Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech is a 3-point favorite. I don't think I can endorse either of these teams.
No, they're horrible. No point to watch that game. Move on.
North Carolina at Miami. Miami, a surprising 17-point favorite over North Carolina.
I know. Well, North Carolina's got a horrible, horrible defense, which is crazy because they've had, you know, a lot of good players over the years. But Miami is actually a lot better than I thought they'd be this year. I guess I would say lay it, but I'd actually be more inclined just to take the over, I think.
I'm inclined to take the 17 in the ACC.
Okay.
An ACC matchup. Miami is better than expected. North Carolina got me a nice backdoor cover last weekend, and I don't know if I trust them to win, but they've covered a couple times when I've taken them so far, so screw it.
Love it. Keep it going.
Yeah. NC State at Syracuse. Syracuse, a rare favorite, -3.
That is very rare. I will not lay any points with Syracuse, so pretty obvious pick for me.
All right, another one. Virginia at Georgia Tech. These are two better than expected teams. Georgia Tech's a 3.5 point favorite. If it was three, I think I would just go for it. 3.5, I'm a little more hesitant.
Yeah, I agree. Georgia Tech has always cost me over the years. It's just horrible luck with them. It's just not good.
They're usually on my no-fly zone list of teams I won't bet on. It's them, Michigan State, Georgia, and there's one other.
USC kills me every time.
Oh, they're horrible. Navy is
USC,
one.
yeah.
Any team with a wishbone offense, I don't bet on.
Oregon State, they're another one.
Lot of
Put that
shady
out
teams
there.
out there, Dan. A lot of
Yeah.
shady teams.
For me, it's Pac-12, Oregon State, and USC. Even when I live on the East Coast, can never pick them right. Just a quick aside.
No, I'm with you. Okay, let's move on to a better conference, and that's the Big 12.
Yeah.
I noticed a few things, but why don't I go through all the lines and then you can start where you'd like to start?
Okay.
We've got Oklahoma State visiting Kansas State. That's a 14.5 point line. Oklahoma at Iowa State. Oklahoma favored by 16.5. Texas at Texas Tech is a pick'em. TCU at West Virginia in a very good game. TCU favored by 5.5. And then Baylor -36 hosting Kansas.
All right, the first thing I want to say is hats off to West Virginia and our old friend, Mr. Holgerson. I'd like to raise a Red Bull to him right now. Not that I, whatever.
He looks like Phil Collins, which I never noticed until last week.
Yes, he looks a lot like Phil Collins. Phil Collins used to be a maniac. Like, don't be fooled by the slow Phil Collins. Go watch some, like, early Genesis stuff. Maniac. So, anyway. Excellent job by West Virginia. They're way underrated. I mean, they have a great quarterback who came from Oklahoma State who should still be starting there. I know TCU just scored 150 points last weekend, but Texas Tech has zero defense, completely. West Virginia is the hardest, like, really hard place to play. We've talked about that. I like West Virginia plus the 5.5 in this spot. So that's one off the bat.
Outright victory, Dan, or just a cover?
Outright.
Ooh, ballsy. I like it.
Yeah, so that's one. Two, you got Oklahoma and Oklahoma State both laying points on the road. I don't like either team. I really don't like Oklahoma State laying any points at all, ever. What else we got? Texas at Texas Tech. Both teams are poison until further notice, so stay away from that one. I think my favorite bet of the Pac-12 would definitely be West Virginia, and I'm interested to see what that over closes at.
Okay, I'm torn on that one. I know TCU's good, and I know West Virginia's better than expected. I don't know exactly how good TCU is, and I don't know exactly how good West Virginia is. So I might stay away from that one and use that as a measuring stick going forward. If I had to pick, man, I really love the way TCU is playing, but it's
Yep.
at West Virginia. Tough one.
Make sure to check the weather forecast before that one for sure.
Yeah, that's correct.
That is the.
Kansas at Baylor. I think Baylor's last game was the loss. I think they are going to beat the shit out of Kansas in a woodshed victory.
It's going to be absolutely brutal. Like,
36 sounds insane, but
oh.
I think it's fine. I think you're
I
looking
can't
at
lay it.
77 to 10 in that
I
game.
can't lay it fast enough. This is your once a year, or no, your like third time of the year Baylor, where they just literally put up like a ton of points in the first half. Like this might be a 55-point first half.
Ever since Baylor got good 5 years ago or so, every single year they lose one game, and then the next week they have a horrible opponent, and they bounce back with style and just kill them. They could score 80 in this game. I wouldn't be surprised.
No, lay it all day.
Texas Tech, I have no pick. However, I did watch that game. Kansas State dominated that game. Kansas State's very good. Swopes is an interesting quarterback. He looks like Vince Young in terms of his stature, and he's got a cannon for an arm. He can run. It seems like Charlie Strong is sort of trying to force a round peg into a square hole with that
That's
one. He should be rolling him out, doing quarterback runs, things like that, and he's just trying to make him play like he's Teddy Bridgewater. It'll be interesting to see what happens next year, if Strong tries to recruit someone else and get rid of Swopes, if he adapts his style. I mean, I think Swopes is a sophomore, so I don't
be a new quarterback.
Yeah, I don't see Charlie Strong changing his style up for 3 years in a row. So yeah. Swopes, look for him at McNeese State next year, running all over Nebraska.
So true. You're absolutely right. Oh, Tom Z, quick breaking news. Check the weather in Morgantown. Saturday, high of 45 with a 75% chance of rain.
Under. What is the over-under? Give me a second.
Well, it's still those two crazy teams. They can score 100, but cold, rainy day definitely favors West Virginia over TCU.
I'm seeing 73 as the over-under on a 45-degree rainy day. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, it's very shady. So
one bad quarter and you don't get a 70-point over-under.
We've now reached the part of the football gambling season where you have to check the weather, which is really hard for me to remember living in Arizona. So you got to keep reminding me this because I'll forget.
Not hard for me here. It's going to be cold. It's going to be fucking cold. It's been Arctic tundra here the last week. Dropped down to, I think, a high of about 48 yesterday. And then today it bounced way back, all the way up to about 64 degrees. People were going crazy. They're like going outside for walks, talking about how nice the weather is.
Delusional. No. If you want to see nice weather, pick up your iPhone and put in Phoenix for the next 10-day forecast.
Right. And that's why every time I go to, you know, Atlanta to visit people I know there, or I've been to San Diego, San Francisco, I add the iPhone weather app just so I can see what it is while I'm out there. And as soon as I come home, I have to immediately delete it. Otherwise, I just get like a low-grade depression.
So true.
All right, I had one more thing about the Big 12. It's, oh yes, Kansas State. So they're really good, and they're ranked in the top 10 now in the poll that matters. And I believe they deserve it at this point based on their resume. Their only loss is to a tough Auburn team. They've been looking really good. They sort of don't fit in the Big 12 in terms of style. They play a little more defense, and they're a little tougher than most Big 12 teams. But what I noticed against Texas is they can move the ball. They're not as high scoring as TCU or Baylor, but they can get first downs and move the ball a little bit. Waters is a pretty good quarterback. I like him a lot. I don't like them minus 14.5 against Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
I would take the points in that one, but I do like them to win that one, probably about 7-10.
Okay.
Moving on.
You got it.
The Big Ten, famous for its Doris Burke Memorial Games of the Week.
Ooh.
Every game from the Big Ten this week, Dan, is a potential Doris Burke game. So I'm going to let you pick. Once we're done with all the games, you can tell me which is the most Doris Burkiest game of the week.
No problem. That's what I'm here for.
We've got Wisconsin at Rutgers. Wisconsin's an 11-point favorite.
Yeah, I would take Wisconsin. I read something about Rutgers. Either the quarterback's out or someone important. Something's going on with Rutgers. It's not good. So, but I'm not going to bet it. Next.
Gary Nova is 63 years old, so he might be out with like hip dysplasia or something like that.
Nova! You think he's like trying to like use that line because he was actually like our age? And
I'm pretty sure. I'm also pretty sure his nickname must be Gary Champagne Supernova.
People are like, I've never heard of that band. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, that's what the adults, that's what his friend's parents call him.
True.
Is it sad that all our music we like is old? I was watching 60 Minutes and they were talking about the Foo Fighters celebrating their 20th anniversary.
All right, I'm going to go jump off the roof, have Ryan fill in the rest of the year because that's scary.
The Foo Fighters are a new band.
Yeah, they are, in my book. I think they're like brand new.
Nope. Yeah, they came out after the grunge movement.
Oh, it's not good.
It's poor.
That's bad.
All right, we've got Indiana at Michigan. Michigan, a 7-point favorite.
That's horrible.
Season high for them.
That might be it. Keep going.
Indiana's horrible, though. As I told people last week, you cannot bet on them.
Mm-hmm.
Purdue at Nebraska. Nebraska minus 23.5. I'm torn on this one because Purdue's been mildly improving the past few weeks. They're no longer the worst team in the country. Besides UConn, there's probably a good like 20 teams worse than Purdue now. But Nebraska has been pretty impressive, and you called it last week, and I'm coming around.
They're really underrated. Like they are. This I can't believe it. I'm saying it, but this is like the best Nebraska team we've seen in like 10 years.
Abdul has got to be the best running back in the country.
It's him or Todd Gurley. It's hard to say because of level of competition, but
does Gurley count anymore?
Yeah, who gives a shit about autographs? I'll tell you who doesn't care. 32 NFL teams don't give two shits that he signed a bunch of signatures. It's totally stupid. Anyway, but he's great, and he'll be a high pick in the maybe second round or something. But Nebraska's underrated. Keep going.
You're right. They are a little bit one-dimensional, but nobody can stop that one dimension. So
yeah, it's true.
Illinois at Ohio State. Ohio State favored by 4 touchdowns. Illinois is another team that I think they're getting a little bit better as the season goes on. They're still not good, but they've gone from, one of the 20 worst teams to one of the 40 worst teams.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congrats. I would not lay 28 with Ohio State.
I hate Ohio State. Nope, can't do it. Because if I bet them, they're going to win by 26. I know it.
Absolutely. They'll win by 27.5. They'll be awarded a rare half point.
Yeah, asshole. Yeah.
All right, and then we've got Maryland at Penn State. Penn State, 3.5-point favorite. I think their performance against Ohio State probably boosted that line a little bit.
Yeah, and how awful Maryland got smashed last week, too, like 52-7 against Wisconsin. So this line is purely based off of 1 week. This is your overreaction spread of the week. I guarantee if the spread of this line came out prior to last week's game, it'd be close to a pick 'em, if not Maryland favored.
I actually think the line would have been flipped. It would be Maryland minus 3.
So ignore the Penn State Super Bowl and ignore the Maryland getting run out of the building by Wisconsin. Take Maryland and the points in the spot all day.
I would tend to agree with you, but I like the over at 48 points better than the line.
Fair enough.
So Penn State can put up a few points, especially against Maryland's shoddy D, and Maryland will score a few.
Right.
What's that, 27-24 does the trick? I'll take that.
Okay.
Now, I have something to add about Penn State, if we haven't talked about them enough already. First, I did realize their offensive line is horrible. What I didn't realize is that before the season, they actually were so short at O-line, they moved 2 defensive linemen to play O-line. Had I known that, I would have not been so surprised by their poor offensive line play. Christian Hackenberg is who I want to talk about. He needs 163 yards in this game, and if he gets that, he'll pass Todd Blackledge, and he will become the 8th place all-time leading passer in Penn State history. He is in the middle of his sophomore year, and he's probably going to pass Blackledge this week. By the end of the season, he should be in Penn State's all-time top 5. Again, he's a sophomore. Horrible, horrible offensive line. A pretty bad running game. No depth. Very young receivers. And he had a coaching change between his first and second year. My point is, he's really fucking good. And I hope people realize that around the country. Next year, Penn State has 2 good O-linemen coming in. And I assume there's going to be a few more come in next year and a lot more in 2016. I think there's a chance he could finish his junior year as Penn State's all-time leading passer. And if not, and he comes back for a senior year, he's easily going to get that record.
Okay. Yeah, a couple thoughts on that. It's still too early to see if he's really good or bad, but I mean, they have been semi-competitive. Obviously, he's going to play more games than most people starting as a freshman, and also college football has changed a lot. I mean, it's really hard to have a quarterback throw for anything under 200 yards, whereas back in the day, there was plenty of 125-yard horrible efforts. But, yeah, good job by him. As soon as Penn State gets some recruits, they'll be good.
Yeah, the one thing that sort of ruins all I just said is that the current leading passer at Penn State is Zach Mills.
Oh, point.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Professional poker player Zach Mills is the leading passer. But I hope people appreciate what Hackenberg has done. He kept them single-handedly in that Ohio State game. And some of the earlier wins that Penn State had this season, without him, they'd be horrible. And I do believe if he somehow, moved down to LSU and played for them, there'd be a title contender immediately.
Cool.
So what's our Doris Burke game of the week, Dan? Which of those Big Tens is Doris Burkiest?
That's the easiest question of the day. That's Indiana, Michigan all day. They're both horrible. Michigan's a complete mess in every single way. Brady Hoke should have been fired. Although, I guess it makes sense to just keep him on, because if you're going to pay him anyhow, you're not going to hire anybody, but I don't know. He's going to get fired, and the AD's going to get fired. I'm going to take an under in this game, the Doris Burke game of the week. I don't care what the total is, I'm taking the under.
Give me a second, let me look it up. What are your thoughts on coaches being fired mid-year? Do you think it's worth it to get a jump on the next season, or do you think you should just let coaches always stick it out?
If someone's available, then yes, but for the most part, I really don't think if it matters if Brady Hoke gets fired, you know, on Halloween or the week after Thanksgiving, really. Does it matter? It's 5 weeks. Not really.
Pretty much any good college coach is not going to be available until December.
Yeah.
And so NFL coaches even later.
Exactly. So, yeah, just keep him there. It's painful for him. I'm sure he would actually prefer just to get fired at this point, go home and go fishing or something. But it's kind of fun to make him come to work every day and actually have to coach and work. So
that's a good point. If you hate Brady Hoke and you're a Michigan fan, the worst penalty actually is to coach the team.
Yeah, he's got to go out there and pretend to care about, like, offensive line blocking. And he's like, oh, God, I can't wait to get fired. It's going to be great. I'm going to get paid, and I'm just going to be at home. I can do whatever I want.
Where's Brady Hoke in 2015?
Oh, he'll be a coordinator somewhere. These fucking guys get recycled more than this 12-ounce Dr. Pepper can. It's my number one complaint about all sports is the recycling of coaches. So don't worry. He'll be back just like our boy at San Diego State landed a job. He can't just be a failure everywhere. It's like, oh, he's finally done, right? Nope. No, he's back. Don't worry. 100% head coordinator job. Either off. I'm guessing he's a defensive guy.
Brady Hoke?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't know by his efforts on the field, but you watch. He'll be D coordinator at, like, hold on, where's he from?
I have no idea.
Give me 5 seconds.
I mean, he's a Michigan alum.
Ooh, that's interesting.
So while you're looking that up, Indiana and Michigan over-under is 53.5, which is far too high for these bad teams. I think that, well, Vegas assumes that anyone betting this game still is going to give Michigan the name recognition and think right. That they're going to blow out Indiana. And right. Indiana has no quarterback. But you got to be crazy to lay 7 points with Michigan against anyone. And you have to be crazy to take Indiana at anything less than 28. So, no gotcha. Good. Stay away.
Hoke is from Ohio, right on the border of, like, Pennsylvania and Ohio, roughly. Kind of. So he's from Ohio, but he can coach in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and also, like, Kentucky if he wants. So look for some Maction, possibly.
I was just going to say coordinator for Frank Solich at Ohio U.
There's so many Mac possibilities with him. We'll go up there to, like, Northern Illinois and be their D coordinator. It's going to be great. Or
Pitt?
Maybe the D coordinator, Pitt Panthers. That is absolutely number one possibility. Pitt Panthers defensive coordinator. It's going to be him and fucking, what's his name with the mustache? Wanstead.
Him and Wanstead.
Come back.
They could use some more defense, so I don't know if I can argue that.
Hoke and Pitt, mark it down.
Hoke might be okay in the ACC Coastal. It is one of the worst divisions in football. The MAC might be better than the ACC Coastal.
What a failure.
All right, Dan. SEC ball. We're going to save our game of the week till the end, but we've got three other SEC games of note. We've got Florida at Georgia.
No. Neutral.
Minus 13. Neutral field.
Site. Jacksonville, okay. Always.
Okay.
In between the hedges, yeah.
I was looking for a way to make a joke about Florida-Georgia line, but I don't really know what they are. I know they're a country band that people like. I couldn't tell you one song.
No clue, me neither.
Yeah, I was going to say something like 13 is the only Florida-Georgia line I care about.
That's right. It's true. Lay it.
Okay, Arkansas at Mississippi State, minus 10.5.
That's a... Well, see...
It's a tricky one. Because Mississippi State, this is a look-ahead game in that Mississippi State's whole season is more important than this game.
Yeah, and you got the injury to their quarterback Prescott, who's in a walking boot. So even though you say it's nothing, I don't believe it's nothing when I see a walking boot. Arkansas likes to run the ball. They can chew some clock. Mississippi State also likes to run the ball. This game's going to fly by. Do not lay the points with Mississippi State. I'm not saying to bet Arkansas, but I would bet an under and close your eyes.
If it was nothing, he wouldn't have a boot on. He would just have nothing on. He'd have a sneaker on.
Yeah, case in point.
All right, I agree with you. Tennessee at South Carolina. Should we discuss this game?
No. Each team played the same game last week where they played an inferior opponent in Auburn and Alabama, and they lost.
South Carolina gave Auburn a little bit of a run. Tennessee struggled.
Yeah, Tennessee's not there yet.
Tennessee, yeah. I'd like to see Tennessee rebound. I like them.
Me too.
I like their new coach. I like their colors.
You got to get some new players in there or something.
They got a lot of young guys, so we'll see. We'll check back next year. All right, Dan, Pac-12 West Coast update. As the West Coast guru,
bring it
this
in.
One's on you. We've got USC at Washington State, 6.5-point line.
Ugh.
Arizona at UCLA, also a 6.5-point line. UCLA favored by 6.5, which seems like a little much. And then one that surprised me a little is Utah at Arizona State. Arizona State's a 5.5-point favorite. I know they're at home and they're good, but Utah has one loss and is sort of a surprise team in the Pac-12 South. I think they'd get a little more respect.
Yeah, I got a bunch of thoughts on this.
Okay.
Where do I begin? Utah is the most complete team in the Pac-12.
Ooh.
Top to bottom.
I like them. They're really good. The only thing I don't like about Utah, they rushed the field after beating USC, which was a 1-point line.
There's nothing going on in Utah. You can't blame them.
I'm obsessed with unnecessary field stormings, like when Baylor stormed the field after beating TCU, even though Baylor was ranked 4 spots ahead of TCU. This game was essentially a pick 'em, and they rushed the field afterwards. They're just bored and drunk on Jaeger, right?
It's Utah. It's either crazy people who don't like Mormons or people like to snowboard. So you're good.
So this is a huge game to decide the Pac-12 South.
So yeah. So first of all, Utah is very, very good top to bottom. Their only question mark is their quarterback, which is crazy. If they had like Arizona's quarterback or Arizona State, they'd be really, really, really good. So this game is really crazy. Taylor Kelly got hit in the head. He got a concussion. He's going through the protocol. They're saying all the same crap that he's going to play, but we saw this before. Utah's sneaky. Huge look-ahead spot for Arizona State. They have a home game next week against Notre Dame here in Tempe.
That's a big look-ahead spot.
Yeah, and people don't know how good Utah is. Take Utah in this spot. UCLA is not good. They're officially not good. They blew out Arizona State without Arizona State's quarterback. They gave up 35 to Memphis. They almost lost to Colorado in double overtime. Arizona, meanwhile, is really good. Well, not really good, but they've taken care of business, and they've seemed to be able to keep games close and score a lot of points. So I would bet the over in this game and not really take a line. But I really can't lay points with UCLA right now. Their defense is horrible, just absolutely horrible. And USC at Washington State. Washington State throws the ball like 80 times a game. That's a crazy one, too. Careful, USC on the road. But this is going back to Washington, and it is, therefore, Sarkisian territory, so be careful. The Pac-12 is really wild. Like, any team can beat any team outside of, like, just a couple teams. But it's wide open. It's a lot of fun. These teams are underrated and a lot of fun to watch.
It's a really fun conference. I like the over in USC-Washington State. I don't know if people realize, even though he's had some amazing games, I don't think people realize how good Connor Halliday is because he plays for such a losing team. I think they can score on USC. I think USC will score a ton on Washington State. And at 64.5, I think they're going to get there.
However, just real quick, see, again, weather check.
Yeah, weather.
Yeah, man, that is way up there. Pullman.
Okay.
It's north.
Yeah, let me temper that by saying check the weather. As that should go without saying, but I guess we'll have to bring it up as a reminder, as a public service announcement.
Depends where it is. Place, like, in November, Washington, West Virginia. Those are the places you always see snow.
Okay. I like Arizona. I think they're pretty decent. Maybe not quite as good as people have them rated, but still decent. UCLA, Dan, as part of the playoff show, which you didn't see tonight, there was a comment that UCLA is ranked 22nd, and that's where Michigan State was, Dan, last season before they began the run, which would have ultimately put them in the playoff. The implication by, I think it was Reese Davis, being that UCLA is still a playoff caliber team, and all they have to do is, you know, just start playing a little bit better.
Michigan State has a first-round quarterback in Connor Cook, and they had the best defense in the country last year. I mean, outside the SEC, but 100% outside the SEC, but, you know, hard to say. UCLA has no defense, and Jim Mora. They're not good. I was wrong. I thought they were good. I was laying points with them early against Memphis and on the road against Virginia, and then just choke. No defense. They cannot get a stop to save their lives, and that's not good against Rich Rod, who loves points.
Agreed, and the O-line for them is not great either. That's one of the big differences from this year, from last year to this year. O-line has stepped it down considerably. I like Reese Davis, but he's way off on that one.
And
he didn't really say it, but he, you know, yeah, he implied it.
And also keep in mind, last week, UCLA played the 2 overtime game against Colorado, and Arizona was off on a bye, so a little rest.
Yeah, I was at that wedding. That's one of those ones that slipped right past my radar. But
yeah,
tying Colorado and going to OT is poor.
Bad. It's
not something you want to see.
No.
All right, we have one more Pac-12 game that merits a little longer discussion. That is the Stanford Cardinal at the Oregon Ducks. Oregon hosts this one. They're 7.5-point favorite. How many times are we going to get burned by picking Oregon, Dan?
Not this year, because I'm not picking them this year. Their offensive line's not good. I know they've been playing better since Mr. Shaw has taken over as coach of Stanford. When these two teams play, Oregon has converted 24% of their third downs, if you add them all up between the games. That's a crazy number when you think about it. They know how to keep this game close. They know how to smash them. Until proven otherwise, you cannot bet Oregon in this spot under any circumstance. Even though I love the team and they're cool, but, you know, you can't bet them because they haven't covered. So, end of story.
Here's what I call the Tom Z paradox of gambling, is that you cannot bet Oregon in the spot. Stanford keeps covering, but now that I finally come around and bet Stanford, now Oregon will beat them by 50.
Most likely, yes.
It's up to me, I guess, to take one for the Oregon team.
Go ahead, Z. It's going to cost you real money, but you're going to have to do it.
Well, we're almost to the game of the week. We've got the anti-game of the week, which is UCF at UConn.
That's right.
UConn covered the spread, Dan. Big game against East Carolina.
UConn, I was so impressed by them because for a couple reasons. One, East Carolina was up 14-0 like instantly, beginning of the game. And then finally, a coach made a smart move. UConn was trying to run the ball and, you know, run the clock and shorten the game and all that crap. And they were getting blown out every week. They had a week off. They said, screw it. And they went to quarterback in the shotgun, 4 wide receiver spread. And I could not believe it, because if you can't run the ball, then just call Hike and throw it to the wide receiver out there real quick. And that's what they did. They went up and down the field on East Carolina. I know their defense isn't great, but good for UConn for at least trying something new and moving forward in college football. Like, nothing frustrates me more in college football when teams go to that conservative old offense. Like, clearly a spread is meant for college football, especially if you can't score any points, and especially if you're a new coach at UConn and you are 0 for 6 ATS. So, good job by UConn opening the spread. That being said, I will not be betting UConn at any point going forward. I will be laying the points this week against them, and that's that. But nice job trying something new.
Was UConn good enough for you to abandon your principle of you will automatically bet against them every week? Now will you actually have to look at the line and think about it?
Yeah, actually, yes. For the first 2 months here, it was an auto wager. I didn't need to look up anything, weather, records, quarterbacks, injuries. I just said, oh, this team's playing against UConn. Let me click there, type in some number between $20 and $100, and hit enter. But now I have to actually see that UCF is actually 5-2, and that means they are better than UConn. So there you go.
That is progress in the Bob Diaco era.
Bob Diaco, look out.
Coach Hottie, as my former coworker called him. Notre Dame at Navy.
That's not the game of the week either, people.
I don't care.
No, you? Notre Dame at Navy. Navy's a sneaky team, but this is a nice 14.5 point spread. My least favorite amount of points to lay in college football is 14.5. It's worse than 7.5 because at least at 7.5 teams are like, well, I'll get two scores to keep it close. 14.5 is the hardest number to cover in all sports betting. So I'm not laying it, even though they'll probably cover. But Notre Dame's one of those, you know, jinx teams that we always talk about that we can't make money on. So stay away from them. Especially with their look-ahead game at Arizona State next week. Keep that in mind.
I agree. Actually, I don't agree. I don't care, as I said before. I will Fair be enough. Not watching. I will be not betting.
Either am I. Good. So
and I won't check the weather.
Just said. Yeah. All make right. A turkey sandwich. That's what a turkey sandwich was. Is a better option.
It's more interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Time for the game of the week. Ole Miss hosts Auburn. They are a 2.5 point favorite at last check. This is the game of the week. It's possibly the game of the year so far. I think it's a little premature to call this a playoff elimination game, which some people have, but there's no doubt it's unbelievably important. I think this game marks the beginning of what I would call the critical point of the season, where you can't really fuck around anymore.
This is your first elimination game of the entire year, most likely, unless all hell breaks loose.
We say that every year, though, and then all hell does break loose.
We haven't seen a two-loss team in the top four, I don't think, in a while. There's a lot of things going on in this game. You got Auburn's great offensive line play going against that ridiculously good Ole Miss defense. However, Ole Miss lost one of their best players for the year on defense that number one overall recruit 2 years ago, Nemdichi, the defensive end linebacker.
I can't pronounce his name. I know who you're talking about, though.
He's out for the year, so keep that in mind. These teams are really even. Ole Miss is a little bit more on the side of defense. Auburn's a little bit on the more side of offense. Both loaded full of SEC talent. This is SEC football at its finest. When in doubt, either go with the home team or take the points. Of course, that usually is very rare and goes together.
That doesn't really help you much in this game.
No, I know, exactly. But if one of those two options is, if they ever line up, you know what to do. But in this case, I'm going to take Auburn. I think that their experience is going to give them the slight edge. I mean, this game is so painful for me. These are my two favorite teams in the whole country, and I would love if we got rid of overtime and this game ended in a tie, just one time.
Dan, you were touting both of these teams from the beginning of the year when nobody was on board. I mean, you had Ole Miss in your top five when they were ranked.
Like 23rd.
Yeah, 17th in the country. Yeah, and you had Auburn as your national championship pick for the whole year. This must be like watching your two imaginary children play.
Yes, which I have. So, since I went with Auburn to win the national title, I'm going to have to pick them to win this game. But what I'm going to do is put Auburn in my 4-team, 13-point tees. So, there you go.
I think we could get to that. Now, this is I think this is the night game. Yeah, 7 p.m.
Yes.
Now, what I've been trying to figure out is whether my neighborhood is going to do Halloween on Friday night, as should be, or whether they're going to push it to Saturday, as they usually do when Halloween falls during the week.
What the fuck kind of shit is that?
It's a weird Hartford, Connecticut suburb, you know? They just do Halloween when they feel like it.
Kind of a weird post 9/11 world are we living in?
Yeah, there's a new thing now that they do where it's too dangerous to send kids house to house, so all the parents put candy in the trunk of their car and go to a parking lot. And the kids go around the parking lot from trunk to trunk.
This seems like they're encouraging half of the kidnapping to take place. That's just not good.
Yeah, I think it's safe to go house for house, especially now that Mach 3s cost so much. There's no more razor blades and apples.
Yeah, it's far. It's not. It's too expensive to kill people that way.
I don't know what we're talking about. Anyway, my point is, if I have to have little kids ringing the doorbell every 5 minutes while Auburn is playing Ole Miss, it's going to be bad times for the kids. I'm going to open the door and just chuck a handful of Butterfingers at them.
I would just turn off your lights, get in your car, and leave. That would be my number one advice.
Yeah, what is your theory? Because we're both sort of in the same boat, you know. I feel like I'm a little too old to just, you know, like go out partying, go out clubbing for no reason, unless it's like a wedding or something. But I don't have kids, and I don't really want to sit around answering the door and handing out candy on Halloween. So should I just go to the bar and watch this game?
If it's on Saturday, yeah, you got to get the hell out of there. You need to watch this. Like, you cannot be distracted by children.
What if it's on Friday? What if they're coming around hot Friday? There's no real good games on Friday. Do I owe it to my community to stay there and hand out candy?
You don't owe anything to anybody's community, first of all. But if you want to hang out with the wife and be, you know what? Yes. Friday, here's what you do.
Should I schedule something? I have nothing on the docket. Should I purposely schedule something so I'm not home on Halloween?
No. Friday, you leave work. You pick up something nice to eat from like a half-decent, you know, restaurant. You bring it home for the wife. Nice meal. Get the candy for the kids. You watch a movie. Put in good effort Friday night, because Saturday is Tom Z time. Okay? That's all I'm saying.
Dan, and the point of getting married is you don't have to do stuff like that anymore.
I think I've seen friends who stopped doing that. Now they're filling out paperwork. So I'm just telling you, put in a good effort. Then Sunday is easy for you. You got you know there's no Bills game. You can go apple picking again or whatever you guys do.
And then it's pumpkin picking at this time, Dan. Please,
right? You might as well be picking first round picks in the Ole Miss Auburn game instead. So do what you got to do, but lock down your plans so you got 4 hours to watch that football game on Saturday.
All right, I like it. So you're picking Auburn.
Yes. And I hate it, by the way.
I hate everything about this.
It's awful.
In games like this, where I think it's even, I generally lean to the home team. I don't know. I am very torn on Auburn. We've both been high on them as a playoff team. Obviously, if they lose this, they're probably not a playoff team. I think under duress, I'm going Auburn, but I would not be surprised to see this be a double overtime, some sort of crazy game.
It's a coin flip game. Take the points. Move on.
It's as tough as you're going to get.
Very hard.
How would you feel if Auburn lost by one, you won your bet, but Auburn's out of the playoff?
No, I need Auburn to win the national title. That's what I need.
All right, Dan. That was that's one of the toughest ones you're going to face all season.
Correct.
What's not tough is the Dan Partridge Light Your Money on Fire 4-team tease of the week, which you are now, I believe, 2-1.
We are 2-1, folks. I am proving the haters wrong that this is possible to do.
Yeah, you're beating me for sure.
This is really fun to do. I think you need to start doing this once a week, and just it's hilarious. And if you have a wedding or something, this is the best way to bet college football. Just make one wager in a 4-team tease, and that's all you got to worry about. That's it. You know, last weekend I was in San Diego. I watched as much football as I could, but I had stuff to do, so I only bet this, nothing else, on College Saturday, and it came in.
So who are your 4 teams that you will be teasing to 13 points this week?
Yes. Here we go, folks. For your pleasure this week, the Dan P 4-team 13-point tease. We're going to get you started on Thursday night. We're going to get you Florida State +9 at Louisville. Ooh, that sounds juicy, doesn't it? You really think Louisville's going to beat them by 10 or more? No, come on. Okay, so take Florida State as your first pick. Your second pick on a neutral field, you're going to take Georgia in a pick'em against Florida. Florida is, if it wasn't for Brady Hoke in Michigan, they would be the number one story of failure, but it's pretty much 1-2. I like Georgia in a pick'em a lot in that spot. Number three, I'm going to take West Virginia at home plus 18.5 points against TCU. I'd like them to win outright. 18.5 is a lot of points, especially in bad weather. And the final pick of the day is going to be Auburn plus 15.5 at Ole Miss.
All right. This is usually the segment we do called Tom Shits on Dan's four-team teaser, but these four-team teasers might be a little bit better than I expected. I don't know how to even approach crapping on that one.
Thank you. That's what I'm talking about.
Florida State, there's no way they lose by 10. There's no way an Auburn team loses to Ole Miss, even though they're on the road by... How much did they lose to Mississippi State by? 15 or so?
Yeah, something like that. And that was a fluke game.
And that was a weird game where they were down 21-0 before you blink. So I don't think that happens again.
No.
Especially knowing that they can't lose again. Mm-hmm. Florida, I mean, if you're going to lose, it's going to be on a Florida upset.
Not going to happen. Muschamp's getting fired.
You don't think the players will rally around Muschamp? Tim Tebow will show up. Percy Harvin will show up after he punches somebody in the locker room and gets kicked off the Jets.
Aaron Hernandez will be there via
Hernandez will Skype in.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the one. And what is the other game?
The other one is West Virginia plus 18.5.
Oh, home. Yeah. So that's coming in. I guess maybe TCU could just turn out to be one of the best teams in the country and just destroy them. If TCU covers that line, then they should be put in the playoff immediately.
Exactly. Although I am tempted to switch my last one from Florida, Georgia to just teasing down Art Briles to 23 against Kansas.
See, that's always dangerous because garbage time and they lay up. I'd go with Georgia if I were you.
I am. All right. It's settled. Georgia's the fourth team. There we go. Lock it in. Those first three are 100% coming in. I just need Georgia just to win and a pick 'em. Come on.
Yeah, there's a lot of ones you could go with this week. I think Notre Dame -1 looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I think UCF +2 against UConn.
Uh-oh, we have the Tom Z 4-team coming in.
All right, yeah. So here's my 4-team tease. We got UCF +1.5 at UConn. We got Notre Dame -1 at Navy. We've got Auburn +15.5.
Yep.
And we've got Florida State.
Yeah, that's the lot.
Do I have to pick different ones than you?
Nope.
Okay. Then yes, that's my pick.
Write it down, lock it in.
I'd also take Maryland +16.5 at Penn State.
These are so fun, I told you.
I would take North Carolina +30 at Miami. Uh-huh.
I might have a convert. Tom's going to fire like 5 of these every week.
I might do like a 10-team tease this week.
10-team, 25-point tease.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
This is good. I think you get, there's a lot. Oklahoma -3 against Iowa State. There's a lot you could do with this week.
Arizona +19.5 at UCLA.
Yeah, I'd be willing to. I'd actually tease TCU and get them at, +8 or whatever it is.
Ooh, that's interesting, too.
So make what you will of that. But I will be doing a 10-team tease this week.
I'm excited.
Yeah. See, you got your cute little 4-team tease, but it's time to step it up.
Just saying, 4-team, 13 points. It's the wave of the future.
All right, Dan, what else is up with you? You had a trip to San Diego. Anything good come of that?
Yeah, San Diego's great. It's a nice place. You know, we enjoyed... Actually, we were in Chula Vista, which is a little bit south of there. But,
close enough.
Yeah, it was nice. Yeah, we went to the beach for lunch. You know, enjoyed the town. Just had a nice... It was nice to just leave Phoenix for a couple days and kind of relax. But besides that, you know, work, etc. I actually have to work this weekend one day. Unfortunately, I'll be at work during the Ole Miss game. But
you're working on Saturday?
Yeah, but unfortunately...
Did you have a choice in that matter, or did they just tell you?
I have a choice. I make the schedule, but...
So you choose NFL over college?
Yeah, it's a weird thing where the other manager works Arizona State home football games. It's not important, but the point is it's very slow on Saturdays at the airport, and I'll have the TV volumes on that game the whole time. So don't worry, I'll see the whole thing.
Dan, I have a restaurant etiquette related question for you.
Ooh, good. I'm your expert.
Not a specific one, actually, but I'm just wondering, maybe you can give the listeners of the podcast some etiquette tips, you know, when they go out on a Saturday to, you know, Buffalo Wild Wings or their favorite restaurant, and they're going to watch sports for a while. What is the appropriate etiquette?
Be really nice to the person with the remote control in their hands. Don't just say, "Hey, buddy, can you put on that Notre Dame game over there?" Don't say it like that. Say, "Come over to me and explain why you need that TV change. Is it because the game on there is already over in a blowout? Is it because you got money on this game? You need to tell me these things to inspire me to change the channel." I'm very specific with my four TVs in there. I have a nice rotation down. I know what games are going on and when. I know when I'm switching the channel. So if someone comes in there and tries to ask for some obscure Indiana-Michigan game because they got a Michigan hat on, I'm going to have a chat with them. So my advice is to be really nice and find a common ground with the man with the remote control. That's your best bet.
Would they gain favor if they came in with a very large group? You know, if 10 people are eating, do you give them preference over 2 people?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. It is pretty much based on how many people you have. If there's one guy, there's always one guy at the bar who's like, "Can you put on the Indiana Pacers, Charlotte Hornets game?" I'm like, "No, we're in the middle of the NFL playoffs. That's not going on." We had some Canadians come in during the Olympics and asked, or no, sorry, not during the Olympics, and asked to put on curling. It was the curling Canadian Curling Championship. I'm like, what kind of satellite package do I need to pick up that channel? Because that does not exist in the lower 48.
I'm pretty sure those guys were just from Flagstaff and they were fucking with you.
They may have been, but I was like, no, we don't get that. Sorry. So that was rejected.
All right. Good to know. Yeah. I think we should add this as a regular feature, restaurant etiquette tips.
Yeah. Ask me anything you want. I'll tell you the truth.
All right, I'll think of more next week.
You got it.
I think we got the general don't fuck with your server. It's probably a good one in general.
Sometimes. I mean, you'd be surprised how much that people can get away with.
Do waiters take it personally, or is it sort of a thing that once they're off the clock, they forget about all the shitty customers?
They forget about it as soon as they wait on their first person the following whatever afternoon or shift or whatever. I mean, I know it was like it for me. I would take it home with me and be like, "Oh, that guy's an asshole, blah, blah, blah." But then, you know, you think about it and it's just the service industry. You know, I mean, we all work in it because we like, you know, working with people. That's kind of how it is. And we don't like to sit in offices and we're kind of weird people who aren't like everyone else. But, yeah, I think that's a good way of saying it. But, yeah, I think that sums it up well.
All right, well, good. Well, anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's it. Have a safe Halloween weekend or whatever day people celebrate it on. I don't know what happened. We had to wear heavy clothing and winter jackets and go out on a Tuesday night in the snow. There was no postponing for us. So
in Syracuse?
Yeah, we didn't postpone Halloween.
Oh, yeah. They don't. You can't be a little bitch at living in Syracuse.
It'd be a Wednesday night. It'd be like 38 degrees and snowing sideways somehow. And then they'd be like, "Nope, go ahead. Get out there." So I don't like these kids pushing off till Saturday. That's unacceptable.
This is another podcast entirely, but the things that our parents cared about or didn't care about are pretty remarkable. I mean, you realize we would go to teachers' houses, play basketball, and then like go in and have lunch. That would not really fly without any other adults around.
Yeah, that would not be cool now. There'd be a cop already at the house. There'd be a story. There'd be a news helicopter already overhead.
Yeah, that guy would be, he'd be walking around with the blur over his face.
Yeah, he'd be like, "I don't know, no, nothing happened." It's crazy how many things we're like, "Oh yeah, go have fun. Yeah, don't worry about it." Okay.
Kids today. All right, time to end the show.
All right, goodbye.
Yeah, bye everyone. See you next week.
Take the point. Later. Take the point. 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 Take the point.
We have very similar talk radio here in Phoenix to upstate New York.
Syracuse would have won the national championship in 1988 if there wasn't that one pass interference call against Miami. True, they lost 56-3, but it was that one pass interference that turned the tide.